Today is March 1st, 2020, and this is Movies Podcast 320, So Long to Evernote, which I'll talk about right now. Tato Gaswar here, John Westfall, and we'll see if we can stretch our little notes to 30 minutes. The first one I found kind of interesting is, you know, if you use Facebook, and I know a lot of people have dropped it, but if you still use Facebook, one of its interesting features is its ability to turn some iPhone, what is it called, portrait mode photos into 3D. Mm-hmm. Apparently now, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently now you can turn any 2D photo into a 3D image, or really a pseudo 3D image, using, I guess, computed parallax. I haven't tried it yet, but looking forward to it, because there are some... Sometimes I'll take a portrait mode photo, and really the framing isn't quite right, so it doesn't make a good good 3D photo. But I'd like to crop it or something. But of course, if you do that, you destroy the data that was taken to create the portrait mode with, you know, the depth information and so forth. So it won't let you do that. So perhaps now you can do that, but we'll see that. That said, you know, I think I mentioned last week or a couple of podcasts ago, it looks like, at least to me, the ability to turn Apple's iPhone Live photos into a little, like a mini movie, like a mini video file. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. I think John drops off something. That seems to have disappeared from Facebook, which is nice. You know, it's nice to have like a, you know, instead of creating a GIF or GIF. It's GIF, right? Not GIF. GIF, which reminds me, we can talk about that next, GIF versus GIF. But anyway, that seems to have disappeared, because I can't create little mini, you know, 5-second videos or whatever it was from Apple iPhoto. That said, John, did you see I think there's some kind of promotion going on from Skippy's? I guess it's Skippy's. or GIF. No, that's a different brand. GIF. Well, whatever it is, you know, the Jif peanut butter. They have some labels with JIF and some with GIF. And, you know, I think the creator of the GIF file for graphic interchange format, graphics file format, pronounces it Jif and not GIF like I've done for most of my adult life. So
I can ever remember is that there's supposed to be a way to pronounce it, and I don't ever remember which one is supposed to be the way to pronounce it. So,
and I don't know what John is doing, but it sounds
that
painful.
I'm probably wrong or what.
John is killing something over there.
I am. I'm ripping something up with my bare hands to express my frustration over two things. First of all, Facebook, you know, just in general, Facebook is more and more problematic as the years go on. I think they have built a very robust communication platform. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people that it's taken the place of personal email addresses. Yeah. I think, you know, when you want to communicate with someone. Some of the way in which they have, you know, monetized things that most people would rather they not monetize and not really crack down on the spread of misinformation and all of that makes it just really hard for me to get into any new features with Facebook without wondering how dirty I'm going to feel using them. And it's unfortunate because I think it's a very good platform in terms of functionality. I think that they're always trying to add stuff in that is really cool like this, but as a company, it's just harder and harder, I think, every year to do business with Facebook and not feel like you're somehow complicit with some things that they let slip through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it used to be, I mean, I used to make the joke years ago, I don't now because it's no longer true, but I used to make the joke that Google's motto was, and I used the past tense, was, you know, don't be evil. And, you know, Facebook's motto was be evil. Of course, now both are evil, so it doesn't matter. So
yeah, they're both evil. But, you know, Facebook definitely was, hey, if Google doesn't want to be evil, we'll be evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they built a very platform in terms of everyone I know pretty much has a Facebook account. There's a few people here and there that have dropped it, but that's how I would contact with most people informally. But it's frustrating how that sort of utility aspect of them has been dwarfed by the worrisome aspect.
Right. And the problem is there really is no competitive service, right? I mean, Google's, Google Plus See, I had to think about what it was called. That was a flop to the point it disappeared. So was its Google predecessor, Orkut, which, you know, English-speaking people didn't like and people who didn't speak English apparently loved. Or I shouldn't say didn't speak English, but people whose primary language was something other than English loved. Twitter is really not even close to it. MySpace? I don't know. What else was there? I'm kind of stretching here. AOL, America Online. Prodigy. There's been a whole bunch of products that Facebook was, I guess, inspired by in some sense, but then overtook, and now that's all there is. I mean, yeah, you know, people talk about some federated systems that let you take control, I guess. There's one that's kind of, some kind of dinosaur name. I can't remember what it's called.
Mastodon.
Right, sorry. Mastodon. Sorry. Yeah, dinosaurs are not mammals. I know. I'll get hate mail for that. but I was close. You know, prehistoric, I should have said. So, you know, there's Mastodon and things like that. But really, you know. And this, what was the other one? I was going to say dysentery. That's not a disease. Dyspora? Something like that. There was another, you know, kind of a do-it-yourself, open-source one that a lot of people had helped for. But basically, Facebook is what we got, you know? It's sort of like Google, right? I mean, there's Bing, and there's, you know, DuckDuckGo, and there's a couple other search engines. But really, I don't know. There's probably a few other things I can't remember anymore.
But it's really funny. It's Google. Google and DuckDuckGo, and I tried a couple of months ago, when I was really playing around with my Raspberry Pi 4, I put the default searches DuckDuckGo on there just to try. And man, DuckDuckGo is awful. We forget how good Google is when you think about what you're actually looking for when you type in something or another. Yeah. You know, I was looking for something that all I wanted was the Wikipedia entry on it.
Right.
And because there were so many, I guess, other hits for this and that, the Wikipedia was on page 2 or 3 of the DuckDuckGo results. Yeah. The same search on Google, it's the first or second item. So, yeah, that's the unfortunate thing about DuckDuckGo and the other searches is that Google still is the best search, unfortunately.
And here's the interesting thing. A person as technical as you went to Google to get the Wikipedia. You know?
Exactly. I'm also fundamentally lazy.
Like most good programmers are.
Yes.
But you know, the funny thing is, I remember years ago, I still know them. They're still alive. I know some very smart people I consider to be at least very smart and respect. And they use Google instead of typing in the URL. I mean, they type in practically the URL except the .com part, and they let Google sort of find it for them. You know, they'll type Facebook to find Facebook instead of typing Facebook.com. I mean, they'll type in 4 extra letters. So it's interesting.
I don't know why that, you know, it's sort of like, I guess we've made the decision in our brains that the few extra seconds is fine because, you know, we'd rather click instead of type 3 or 4 extra things on the keyboard.
Right. And the other funny thing is, you know, people ask me why I don't bookmark anything in browsers. I don't know if you do, but I stopped doing that years ago. And because it's simply easy, I usually, you know, if I know enough to shortcut something or like something enough to shortcut something, I'll probably remember what it is and I'll just type in Google and let it find it for me. There's no need for
it. See, the irony is I use bookmarks all the time. And that's one of the reasons I use Firefox is because I can sync. Basically, I have one machine that's running both iCloud bookmarks and Firefox, and so it'll keep my bookmarks in sync between, you know, various platforms on Windows and, you know, versus on a Mac.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do use bookmarks.
Instead of bookmarks, I now use Google Keep because it has more features, of course, than a bookmark, and it works on every machine I use, so I couldn't use Firefox on my Chromebook, for example. So, interesting. Anyway, okay. So next up is something I don't know if you ever used. I tried it once or twice. Didn't work for me. That's Cortana, you know, Microsoft's assistant that never assisted me in a single darn thing I tried to get it to do for me, so I stopped using it, you know, in favor of, you know, the A person and the G person. So, and now John's, I think, playing with a lock. That's my guess. He's trying to pick a lock.
it was a screwdriver rolling off my desk, actually.
Okay. any rate, so it says the Windows Central has a little article that says Cortana skills are going away as part of the updated Cortana experience. Really, it's not an update experience, it's a downgrade experience because you're losing all the personal stuff that was in Cortana's. And, you know, I can't say I miss it because I never really used it. I don't know, you ever use Cortana, John?
You know, Cortana, aside from being very pushy in Windows 10 and trying to get me to use her, I just never really resonate with Cortana for much the same reason that I don't use the skills very much in, you know, I think I haven't enabled a new skill on my Echo in probably 6 months. You know, I just don't, once it's set up, I don't really want you to keep doing new things. I want you to do what I do, which I guess is sort of the problem with technology. We used to joke about, you know, the Steve Jobs idea of, you know, we'll tell you what you want.
Right.
But to some extent, I sort of do need that because there might be 100 new skills that my Echo can do and that my, you know, new Siri shortcuts and all these other things. And unless I have a problem to solve, I don't tend to find those until, you know, they're either pushed on me in an update or they're marketed to me in a viral campaign. I mean, I think about the shortcut keys that I use on iOS and how half the time I don't even remember them, the gestures that, you know, you can do with five fingers and four fingers and all that. I just don't even think to do it half the time on my iPad.
Yeah, it's become a little bit too arcane, I think is the word I want to use. And the problem I have with, and it's why I could never be a magical person. I could never be a wizard or warlock or whatever it is. Because I could never remember the incantations for the Echo and for the Google Smart Assistant. I tried a couple of the Echo skills. You know, I tried to avoid the A word. I tried to use a couple of them. I might have installed a few, you know, in the beginning because it was new and interesting. But I haven't probably for years added any skills to the A word. It's the Amazon Echo is an amazingly useful device to me. Right now I use a Echo Show 5, and also I have the Echo Flex, which is a little one that I also use as a nightlight. And it's great. I mean, but I use its core functionality. I ask it about news, ask it about weather, use it for alarms and timers. Same thing with the Google Assistant. You know, I kind of very similar use cases, except that Google's Smart Assistant has a terrible weather database. I think you're using AccuWeather. I'm not sure. But it's always 5 to 8 degrees off, at least for the weather, the temperature in where I live. So it's sort of useless. But yeah, you know, it's not, I use the basics. It's kind of funny, you know, like when I used to see people using DOS or Windows or Mac OS and not do anything except 3 or 4 things, I used to kind of look at them, oh, they're really wasting the potential of their device. And I think I'm the same way now with at least assistance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know what the solution is to getting back to using more of the device's potentials, but I think it is funny that we want new features, and then we don't use half the features we have.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, reflecting on the Harry, I can't remember if you were one of the people who've never read Harry Potter, but
I have.
Reflecting on the Harry Potter movies and books, you know, the kids, the characters in the books, spend an awful lot of time learning their incantations and charms and so forth, because it is a mental challenge, right? It is something you have to learn. You know, very few people are innate with it, with a possible example of Hermione. So, you know, it just takes too much work to learn these skills, these incantations and charms, you know, how to use these things on the assistants. Whereas the basics, you know, you fire it up, you ask a couple of questions, you ask for music, whatever, and you're kind of done. Yeah. Well, we can return to that someday.
It is funny. And, you know, some of the things that I think of, there's a double tap with the Apple Pencil in the lower right of the iPad will take you back to the home screen.
I didn't know
so
that.
So you don't have to. Yeah, I just saw that one today. And I haven't even tried it yet, but I saw a video that was, hey, you know, if you do this. And yeah. Like, why don't we, you know, Apple gives me a bunch of tips I don't need, but then this would be one that, you know, it should be able to detect when I have to put my Apple Pencil down, reach over, flick with my finger, yeah. And then reach back and grab the Apple Pencil. It should be like, hey, if you just, you know, tap here twice, that'll take care of it for you.
Well, you know, be careful what you wish for, John, because what you wish for sounds an awful lot like Microsoft's Clippy.
you know, Clippy, just poor Clippy. Clippy got such a bad name. All he wanted to do was help you write letters, and you just, everyone shunned poor Flippy. Or
yeah,
Clippy.
It's funny, right? I mean, the intent of Clippy was a positive thing. It should have been, you know, to help you learn how to use your, what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, to help you, you know, expand the potential of your device. But it was so, I don't know, annoying or intrusive. It was the Jar Jar Binks of, you know, of assistants. That we just said, you know, don't be such a smart aleck. Just go away.
Yeah, just go away. Yeah. And then we didn't even realize that there were other Clippies. You know, there were other characters that nobody ever played That's with right. because Clippy
was so annoying
for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a dog, like a terrier, and some other stuff. But you're right. Okay, now something else that has gone away, at least for me. And except I didn't even realize it until I started getting these messages a few days ago. Now I'll put a graphic in the show notes for our blog. And I recently got a pop-up on my Chromebook, where I spend most of my time when I'm not recording a podcast, at least. And it was from the Evernote app, I assume, that's installed on it. And it said, "Your notes miss you. Check in on them to make sure you're remembering everything." And, you know, I said, wow, I didn't think about it, but I haven't used Evernote probably in, I don't know, a couple of weeks, maybe a month. Evernote, and the reason is because Evernote in the browser, which is how I use it mostly because the application became such a hassle. Evernote in the browser, which is what I use mostly on a Windows machine at work and on my Chromebook at home or at work. I have a Chromebook at work too. Became so flaky I couldn't type into it anymore. The cursor would move, you know, on its own. At first I thought it was a bad mouse or a bad trackpad, and I fussed around with it, and it turned out it was true in all kinds of devices. It wasn't just one device with a, you know, misconfigured trackpad or something. And so I simply stopped using Evernote because it was just too annoying. And in its place, as I mentioned earlier, I've been using Google Keep a lot for personal stuff. And for work stuff, I've been putting it in Microsoft OneNote, which is, you know, packaged as part of Office 365 for the enterprise, as well as 365 for personal and home use if you have a personal copy. But so I split into two applications, which is kind of okay, and it's good to separate your office work from your personal work. I mean, really separate it so that in two different storage areas and two platforms. But, Evernote, which was a integral part of my life for, I'm going to say, about 15 years. I don't remember really when I started using it. But I think 2005, when it was still a Windows-only app, there was kind of an endless scroll. It was like a never-ending toilet paper that you write on. Or a paper tape is what I think they want you to say. But paper tapes are usually too thin. So I remember it was a Windows app with just an endless scroll, you know, of notes. That's how I started using it. So 15 years, I've been using it every day, and I'm going to guess about a month ago, maybe I just said, you know what, I'm done. This is too much of a hassle. Might be more than a month.
Yeah, I came to that same thing about probably 3 years ago now, three years ago. I had been using Evernote really heavily for about probably 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
And eventually, just it got a little flakier here and there. It was slow. It was all these other things. And I just started worrying about how I was going to get stuff out. It was when you and I first started noticing the decline of Evernote. And so two or three times in the last year or two, I have exported all of my Evernote stuff out to HTML. And so I've got that on my network attached storage. I can go through my Evernote archives if I need to, but it just, I sort of gave up on it myself. And now I might log into Evernote every so often on the web. I don't think I have it installed on most of my devices anymore. The irony is that it's so slow to open up on the web. It just makes me more resolute in not using Evernote again.
There you go.
So
there you go.
But it's sad because, you know, we had grown to love Evernote and use
absolutely.
Evernote every single day.
Yes, I even bought Evernote's notebook, paper notebook.
Yeah, I had one of those too.
That lets you had, I think, special markings or something. So you didn't have to use a special pen or anything, but it has special markings that you could put little physical labels on it to categorize things and scan them into Evernote. And I thought that was really clever stuff, you know. It didn't work all that well, but I thought it was really clever and a good attempt. we were fans. I mean, I think you and I were both really fans of that thing. We used to talk about it all the time. We started this podcast with notes in Evernote, except the synchronization never worked right.
Yeah, we did. That's right. So we had so many problems with conflicted copies, we went to Google Drive.
Yeah, and we've been using that ever since. And it's been a great thing because it's made it really easy for us to share our show notes with our friends when we have guest panelists. And so it's been really a real great way to do our podcast and using Google Drive and Google Docs in a shared mode. But at any rate, so long to Evernote. I mean, I still got my account, and, you know, I'm not going to, like, turn it off. And I've tried to use Notion. We've talked about it. You had a few suggestions for me. I've been thinking about using journaling as part of the solution to not using Evernote. I haven't really done that yet, mostly because I'm too cheap and to pay for it. But and I'm trying to make peace with OneNote, Microsoft's OneNote and Office 365. I still really haven't. I mean, I use it daily now, but I still don't like it, and I still like using Evernote, you know?
And that's a funny thing about it, that I did like Evernote until Evernote just started to worry me so much that I thought, maybe it's time to do something else.
Yep. Now, speaking about worrying, now you don't have any value judgment in the show notes I see here, but you talk about something I've been reading about, and some people are pleading with Apple not to do this. So what are your thoughts?
Well, so I assume you're referring to a keyboard with a trackpad.
Yes, which I like. I like that idea.
I have no value judgment on it. Steve Jobs would be rolling over in his grave. Maybe he is right now, for all we know. And I get that. I get that the iPad was designed to not need a trackpad.
Right.
Of course, I could also make the argument that as Steve Jobs conceived of the iPad, it was probably never supposed to be a content creation or laptop replacement, no matter how hard that was sold.
Yeah.
You know, it just did not have those features at launch, and it wasn't really until the roadmap was taken over by Tim Cook and company that those things started to show up. So, that being said, I don't particularly think we need to care about what Steve Jobs would or wouldn't have liked. What I do think is interesting is that it is interesting that people are finding it controversial. I think it's great. You know, it's another option. I don't know if I would use it because I've not had that option. I've not been one to hook up a mouse to my iPad Pro like you can now through the accessibility settings and use it. I know people who have that and love it. So I just think anything that lets you do more with the device is a good thing. I'm very skeptical that it's actually on the roadmap. This is one of those rumors that I'm going to remain skeptical of until we get a little bit more collaboration on it.
Right. And this is just a rumor, right? This trackpad for the new iPad Pro with a new Apple product. Excuse me, I got to sneeze. With a new Apple product, a smart keyboard with a trackpad. Nobody knows for sure, well, except Apple, I guess. I'd kind of like to see it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, you know, I don't really use a keyboard all that much with my iPad. The only iPad I use a keyboard a lot with is my iPad Mini because I carry it everywhere. And I bought a, I think it's an Anker, a Bluetooth keyboard, which is wonderful. It's actually bigger than the iPad, which is nice because it's a full-size keyboard or pretty close to full-size keyboard. And I use it in meetings where I don't want to carry a notebook, which is most meetings these days. I'm just too lazy to carry a full-size notebook. So I just carry an iPad and my my keyboard in a bag and all everywhere. And I just pull it out and, you know, I pair them together. And it's Bluetooth and it works great. You know, but talking about Steve Jobs, you might remember this, John. You know, when the iPad first came out, one of the weirdest accessories that came out at the same time, and I bought one because I thought it was a, for some reason, I thought it was a good idea, was a keyboard that connected to the 30-pin connector in the original iPad. The weird thing is, as you know, is the 30-pin connector was at the bottom of the portrait mode view, so the keyboard only worked with the iPad in portrait mode view, which I thought was weird.
I do remember that now. I don't think I ever owned one of those, but yeah, I have a feeling that when the iPad came out, the user metrics on it weren't very clear, and I don't think Apple quite realized how many people would use it in landscape.
You think so? Now that's I
wonder about that because, you know, if you think about how the original iPad was marketed, it was always in portrait mode. It was never in landscape mode. I think it was sort of a, you know, we're going to have a bigger phone and your phone is in portrait mode and so your iPad's going to be in portrait mode. And then when people started using it and Apple started giving the, you know, telemetry data showing, hey, the, you know, landscape feature is much more attractive, than it became maybe we should put the keyboard like that.
Right. And of course, once Netflix app was released for it, it's all landscape all the time. But it's just a good point because, you know, I'm trying to remember the Steve Jobs announcement for the first iPad. And I'm looking back, you know, kind of literally closing my eyes and looking back at it and playing it back. I think he turned it to landscape mode just to show you could, but all his demos, when he sat down in the armchair and, you know, was crossed his legs and was reading the New York Times or something, it was always in portrait mode. I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Well, the other problem for me, John, is, you know the problem I had with the smart keyboard for the first iPad Pro I bought, the 9.7-inch Pro, that keyboard disintegrated within like a year or two and stopped working. And by disintegrating, I mean the fabric started disintegrating and it stopped working completely within a year and a half, I think. So that was sort of not the worst $150 I ever spent or whatever it cost. It was kind of expensive, but it's up there. I mean, the worst money I ever spent was the Microsoft Surface RT. That was the worst I ever spent. But and it cost a lot more than the smart keyboard. But Apple's smart keyboard is a close second for, you know, worst things I've bought over the years. So I don't know if I'd buy another Apple keyboard. Hey, have you bought any of the Bridge keyboards?
No, I haven't, but I've seen them. I just haven't gotten tempted enough to buy one yet.
Because they're expensive, too. I'm kind of thinking about one. I'm going to wait for the next iPad announcement, which, you know, if Apple's true to form is probably next month. But who knows, with, you know, everything going on in the world, they might have to delay that. But I think I'll just wait. Anyway, and you have one other thing you have down there. Let's see, what is this about? Oh.
So, yeah, this was an interesting story that Mac Rumors ran about a family at Disney World where the mother of the family dropped her iPhone 11 into the Seven Seas Lagoon, which is at the front of the Magic Kingdom. That you have to cross in order to get over to where the parking is. You
can
take a couple of different ways to get across that that lagoon. And thought, well, there goes my iPhone.
Yeah.
And told Disney about it, and they said, well, you know, periodically we do have divers that go in there and look for things, you know, just kind of see if there's anything. Because the lagoon is not that deep from what I remember reading about it. It's, you know, it's less than 6 feet deep.
Right, so, right.
You know, they said, well, you know, we'll take down your information, and if it comes up, we'll send it to you.
Right.
And after several months, she got a package that had her iPhone 11 in it, and it worked just fine. Powered right up, connected up, and she got the photos off that were taken that night that she was upset that she had not been able to get because they hadn't synced up to iCloud yet. So it's just interesting. That's something that modern smartphones can do. I don't think the iPhone is exclusive in that. I think waterproof Android phones will be the same way, but it's really crazy to think that we have that ability today, that something that was looked at as a, well, it's a goner, never going to see that again, not only is recovered, but it still works.
Yeah, you know, and that reminds me. So the iPhone 11, I'm just trying to read real quick. A water resistant iPhone 11 is rated as IP68, which means it's water resistant in up to 6.5 feet of water, 2 meters, for 30 minutes. And this is, you know, definitely more than 30 minutes. So I'd say that Apple really over-engineered that one, thankfully for that person who lost a phone. But just to remember, you know, it's not rated to be in that. And 6 feet of water, 2 meters, that's probably what the lagoon's depth is, right? And so, they, you know, that's fine within the IP68. What surprises me is the time. You know, according to Apple's own ratings, it's up to for 30 minutes because it's water resistant, not waterproof. I'm really surprised.
Yeah, and it was, I'm trying to see what the, it was October that she lost it.
Yeah.
And it was returned, I guess, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so that's let's call it 3 or 4 months, right?
And if you remember the, you know, the original Apple Watch was not supposed to be water resistant in any way, this and that, and people were swimming with it within the first couple of weeks that they had it.
Yeah.
So I guess sometimes under promise and over deliver, or however that goes, is a better way of living than over promising and under delivering.
Yeah, which reminds me, you know, I haven't used the eject water feature on my Apple Watch in months. I better make sure there's no water. It's working fine, by the way, so I don't expect there's any problem, but you can never tell. Which reminds me, you know, I still have an Apple Watch Series 3, so I don't have the EKG function and I think the fall detection. John, you have the 4, don't you? Or what's the current? 4 or 5? I can't remember.
I have the 4. Yeah, the 5 is the most current, but I have the 4.
So you're one generation behind. I am two generations behind. What are you going to do when the Apple Watch 6 presumably is released later this year?
It's tempting. You know, it is tempting. Usually, the first time I upgraded, I went from a 1 or a 0 to a 3. And then I went from a 3 to a 4 mostly because I had someone offer to buy my 3.
I remember that.
Well, that's a good deal for me.
Yeah.
And now it's tempting to go from a 4 to a 6, but then again, I could also go to a 4 to a 7. Now, this year is my year that I kind of want to upgrade some things. I've got some plans, perhaps, to upgrade my MacBook. The only thing I really don't have plans to upgrade is my iPad Pro, because I just got that at the end of 2018.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to try to get another couple of years out of that before I upgrade it, but it's tempting. I do use my Apple Watch quite a bit, and I think I would like an always-on screen version of the Apple Watch.
Yes.
So,
which is available in the 5, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think you know, if finances allow, I think I will replace my Apple Watch, my 3, with a 6 this year when it comes out. And as I've said many, many times in the past few weeks, my iPad Pro 10.5 is a 27. It was purchased in 2017. I don't know. Might even be a 2016 model that I bought in 2017. But it's iPad Pro 10.5. Bought it in like spring, maybe 2017. So it's coming up on 3 years old. It still works fine. It's a great device. It's not slow or anything. But I would be interested in having a 3-camera device, which is the new iPad Pro is rumored to have. Since I don't have iPhone 11 Pro. And so I can be, one of those people that holds up a giant iPad in front of people to take a photo. But, you know, I'm kind of okay with that, even if other people aren't. So, anywho, not much else going on in the tech world that I found interesting, which is kind of the case, right, lately.
Yeah, you know, we've been, I guess we're just waiting a couple more months until we start to see rumors of the next version of iOS and yep. Android. It's kind of a slow season. We had CES, and now we have, who knows when we're going to get things out of China.
So,
that's also slowing us down a little bit, which I'm curious to see if that changes the pattern. You know, if things do slow down, are we going to start seeing WWDC and Google's, Android Developer Conference and all that, if it's going to start pushing farther and farther out? And maybe it resets the cycle. Maybe we go from the summers of iOS beta testing and Android coming out to the winters or falls or springs. Or maybe we skip a whole year. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I also wonder if companies like Apple, you know, if there's a manufacturing delay because of the COVID-19 problem, more than a problem, I just don't know what the word to use. But, if manufacturing becomes an issue, because workers aren't available and so forth and so on, I wonder if they're going to push software, they're going to push themselves to create better software updates for existing models as a way to promote, continued usage of whatever it is you have, versus switching to, from, say, to a Samsung Android device or something. There's nothing, I've got an iPhone 10S, I think, and, I have a 10S, and I don't see any reason why they can't, put better and better features on this, even doing some better depth of field stuff with only, and I say only, two cameras. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they take on the new world, or at least until we get a handle on the biological problems, shall we say, going around the world. Anyway, as usual, we stretched this to well past 30 minutes. Starting off with, I think I had like two notes in our show notes, and then you added a few. We're like a machine, man, John. We can crank these things out.
I guess so.
All righty. Anyway, MobiViews 320 is in the can. We'll talk to you next time.